Good morning. Good to be in church, isn't it? It is amazing the difference 1 week will make. So when we came here last Sunday, it was our first day here. We didn't recognize anyone, and it's just really kind of cool to see all the faces that I recognize now, both through staying with some of you at homes, having lunches and dinners, and seeing people at Awana's. So it's been really great. Before I started, I really wanted to extend just our gratitude, both me and Jane. We've been staying with people in the church throughout the week, having dinner at a lot of your houses, having lunch, and we were really absolutely just overwhelmed by the hospitality that you all showed us. Both Pastor Aaron setting all that up, as well as just the members of the church that took time to be with us, to have a meal alongside of us, and to house us, right? So we really appreciate that. I would go and list names, but there's so many of you, and we really were completely overwhelmed by your hospitality, so thank you for that. We are going to be looking in Genesis today, but before we begin, let's open with a word of prayer. Our Heavenly Father, God, we just thank you so much for this opportunity that we have once a week to come together and to join as one body and to look into your word. We pray, God, that you would just be with this time, be with me, help me to say what you would have me to say, and help us grow closer to you because of our time together right now. In your name we pray, amen. All right. So this morning, I'm going to be talking a little bit about the title is Sojourner, which simply just means like a temporary resident, and I'm talking about how we view the possessions that we have in our lives and the earthly things that we have, and they kind of reminded me of a little bit of a story. So me and Jane, this is my wife Jane, if you haven't met her, you should, we were recently married, so we're coming up on our 1 year anniversary in 7 days, I'll remember, so batting 1,000 so far. So we're coming up on a 1 year anniversary, and we got married just 1 year ago, and they say with marriage, there's a lot of things that you don't expect, you know, there's some things that you kind of expect to happen, but there's a lot of unexpected things that you kind of learn. And one of the small things that I wasn't expecting was how much stuff you can start acquiring once you start kind of sitting down as a married couple. Does anyone have like a lot of stuff in their garage or basement? Yes. So when we're living in a studio apartment, and we knew that we weren't going to be there for very long, and so we made a deal between each other. We said, you know, we both came from homes where there's a lot of stuff, but like, we don't want to hold on to a lot of stuff. She's like, you know, we'll have a few things, there'll be nice things, but I don't want to have a bunch of junk. And so we like kind of made that commitment, but it is amazing how much stuff, even in just 1 year, will start piling up. I remember I came from a family where we always had too many mugs. Does anyone have like too many mugs? Like, you know, those mugs start coming. We're like, you know, we're not going to get mugs. But sure enough, you know, we had a wedding and people started giving us a bunch of mugs. So I think when we started out, day one, we already had too many mugs. And then stuff just kind of comes to you kind of along the way. So I have a few pictures. Our first Christmas, we got given 7 ornaments, which that doesn't sound like much. But if you multiply that out, that means by the time we have our 20th anniversary, we're going to have over 140 Christmas ornaments, right? And there's just different things that people kind of give you, and your garage starts looking like this, right? Anyone can kind of relate, right? It starts to kind of pile up. This is kind of a funny story. My work was giving away a free futon, and we didn't have room for it. But I was like, don't worry, Jane, I'll resell it just so fast. So long story short, we still have a futon in our storage somewhere. And it's amazing in life, though, right? This kind of happens, right? As soon as you kind of settle down and you have this mindset of we're only going to be here temporarily and we have to keep our stuff low. But soon enough, you know, you just start piling on things. And it's so easy to kind of grab the things of life, and it just kind of, it comes to you and it kind of piles up until, well, I swear some people build bigger houses just to store all their stuff that you kind of gather. And I wanted to talk about this because it's something that happens on earth, but it really kind of has a spiritual principle. So in 1 Peter, it talks about Christians, and it tells us, it said, "Beloved, I urge you as sojourners and exiles to abstain from the passions of the flesh, which wage war against your soul." And sojourners is kind of a weird word that most people don't use anymore, but a lot of the translations use this word. It just simply means a temporary resident. All that Peter is saying is, listen, when you're here, similar to what Jane was telling me, listen, we're only going to be here temporarily, right? So don't fill your life up with a bunch of stuff, right? That's the same kind of principle that he's trying to apply to us in our lives. And I think it's really a telling principle, because I think it's something that we all struggle with on a deeper level, you know? We're here on this earth, and we know it's temporary, But oftentimes we find ourselves wanting to cling to things, both possessions, or you have certain dreams or plans or hopes or expectations. And we start having that kind of clenched fist towards God, where we start picking up some things that we really like, some things that we really want, and we don't really have an open hand towards God, and we don't treat this life as something temporary. And so I'm going to be talking about this today, and we're going to be looking at the lives of Abraham and Jacob, but it's really going to come down to this sort of a principle. I want you all to kind of do something with me. If you can just hold out your right hand and make a fist, just like that. When we go through life, we can go through life like this, where we try to hold on to the things of this world. We have certain plans, certain possessions, certain expectations to God that we want to hold on to, and we fight God over them, and we continue with our lives to fight God over them, and we live our whole lives with the clenched fist. Or we can have an open hand. Everyone hold up an open hand with their left hand. We can choose instead to live like sojourners, where we realize that all the things in this life are ultimately temporary, you know? Whether you've lived in Tyrone your whole life, we're all sojourners. We're all only temporary residents. And we need to learn to live our lives with an open hand, where we say, God, you will give me blessings and you will take them away. But in all things, I'm going to trust you. And it's a big lesson to learn. It's a hard one to apply, but it's so important in our lives. It impacts everything about us, whether or not we live life with a closed fist or an open hand. And I want to really look into this by looking at the lives of two of the patriarchs. We're going to be looking at Abraham and Jacob. They're very similar in nature. So for those of you who don't know, this is back in Genesis. I know one of your classes are going through Exodus, so this is kind of the book before. We're going through Genesis. Abraham was the beginning of the Israelite nation. So he's the first one that God calls out and promises him the nation, which eventually becomes the nation of Israel. And Jacob is his grandson. They lived so old back then that Abraham almost actually lived long enough to see Jacob, but they didn't quite weren't quite contemporaries. But Jacob had the same promises that Abraham had, right? This blessing that God gave to Abraham, he gave to Jacob. But what I think is so telling about these men is even though they start off very similar with the blessing of God, they end very different. It says in Genesis, this is going to be a few slides down, but it talks about how they end their lives. But first, I just want to look at the similarities. So we look, they're both blessed by God. Here in Genesis, this is Genesis 17, it says, as for me, this is my covenant with you. You will be the father of many nations. The whole land of Canaan, where you are now residing as a foreigner, I will give you as an everlasting possession to you and your descendants. So we see God's hand of blessing on Abraham, but we also see how Jacob has this same blessing given to him. Here in Genesis 26, it says, sojourn in this land, and I will be with you and bless you, and to you and your offspring I will give these lands. So we see these two men, right? They both knew God. God both spoke directly to them. And they both had the hand of God on their life, right? They both were believers. They had God's blessing. They had riches. They had family. And they had this relationship with God. But they end up in two very different places. We read in Genesis 25 that this is Abraham at the end of his life. When Abraham ends his life, it says this about him. It says, now the Lord... Oh, yeah. It says, Abraham breathed his last and died at a ripe old age, an old man satisfied with life, and he was gathered to his peoples. So we see how Abraham ends his life. And it says, in some translations, it says full of years. But it's the same idea where he ended and he could look back and he says, I was satisfied with my life, satisfied with the years of my sojourning. But Jacob, we see something very different. It says here, this is in Genesis 47, right before Jacob dies, he's meeting with Pharaoh, and he says this. Pharaoh said to Jacob, how many years have you lived? So Jacob said to Pharaoh, the years of my sojourning are 130, and few and unpleasant have been the years of my life. How does this happen? Both men, blessed by God, both men know God. You know, if there were churches back then, both of these people would be people in the pews, right? There'd be people going to church. One dies satisfied with life. The other one dies, he says, few and unpleasant have been my years. God had a plan on each of their lives, and both people fulfilled a purpose, but how they lived it was very, very different. And I want to go with you through these lives because I believe the answer is in that small little hand thing that we just did. Jacob lived life with a closed fist towards God. God used him, but he was always fighting against God, always trying to hold on to the things of this earth. Whereas Abraham lived his life with an open hand. And he says, God, if you bless me, I'll receive the blessing, but if you take it away, I will also give back to you. So today we're going to be looking, we're going to get kind of a snapshot of both of these people's lives. We're going to be going through a few chapters, so I'll be kind of jumping around a little bit, moving through, but I really want you to get an overview, looking at the life of Abraham and the life of Jacob. Where did they start, and how do they end up, and how can we learn from their example, and how can we learn to live a life that we're satisfied with? Right? How do we learn how to die satisfied with life? And I feel it's found in how we respond to our plans, our possessions, and our expectations, and how we treat them when we interact with God. So first, we're going to be looking at Abraham. And if you want to talk about someone that released things to God, you're going to look at Abraham. In Hebrews, he's in the Hall of Faith as someone that just had an absolute trust in God. He had a trust with God and his possessions, and we see this immediately in his story. The first time we meet Abraham, he's someone that is called out of his homeland. It says here in Genesis 12, it says, "Now the Lord said to Abraham, go from your country and your kindred and your father's house to the land that I will show you, and I will make you a great nation. I will bless you and make your name great so that you will be a blessing." And so we see immediately in Abram's life, God has a big calling on his life, and he tells him to pack up everything and leave. And I think it's easy when we read the Bible to just be like, oh, okay, you know, that's just Abraham. But then to really think about, what does that mean like in your own life? What was Abraham giving up? He was giving up his connections, right? This was his hometown, right? A lot of you know what a hometown feels like, right? This was his hometown. This is the people that he knew and the place where he was settled. This was his security, right? He knew whether or not he knew the bad sections of town and the good sections of town and how to avoid rough people and avoid people robbing his possessions. But he chose to leave that, right? God calls him out. He says, I want you to leave all that, all your plans, all your expectations. You know, Abraham probably had a full calendar just like you and me did. And God says, I want you to clear your calendar. I want you to get rid of those plans. I want you to release them to me and trust my blessing. And we see that Abraham immediately holds this open hand to God. And he says, this was the land that you gave me, and you're going to give me another land. I will move forward with you. So he moves forward with God, and the result of it, we see that God pours out his blessing on Abraham. It says, just a few verses down, it says, the Lord appeared to Abraham and said, to your offspring, I will give this land. And we see this every single time that Abraham steps out in obedience, that God continues to show up to him and say and remind him, I'm going to bless you. I have your back. You can trust me. Continue to give everything up to me. And this affects not only how he viewed his plans, but it also affects how he views his possessions. So we see here, this happens just a few chapters down in Genesis 13. Abram has kind of uprooted himself, given his plans over to God. He's in the land, and he's like, this is it. You know, I've in the land of promise, but it wasn't all easy. So as soon as he starts building himself up in this land, all of a sudden there's a conflict that arises between him and his nephew Lot. They both had a lot of flocks, a lot of herds, and there starts to be a conflict between them. And we get to see Abraham's heart here because we see how he handles this conflict. It says, but the land could not support them while they stayed together, for their possessions were so great they were not able to stay together. And quarreling arose between Abram and Lot, and the herder, Abram's herders and Lot's. So Abram said to Lot, let's not have any quarreling between you and me. Is not the whole land before us? Let's part company. And this is what he says. If you go to the left, I'll go to the right. If you go to the right, I'll go to the left. And we see here again, as Abraham just opens up his hand to God, even though this was his land, right, that God had given him the divine right to have. If anyone had a right to a land, it was Abraham. Because God, literally, he could walk up to someone and be like, God put my name on this land, right? But instead, he chooses to hold it lightly. And he says, listen, Lot, wherever you want to go, I will give you this. I'll give you the land. And really, this was the security that these people had. If their flocks and herds weren't producing, they wouldn't have food to eat, right? And so the land was completely crucial for this type of a person. They would travel all around just for the best land. But instead, Abraham gives it away because he ultimately trusts God and he holds out that open hand. And we see God's response to Abraham when he chooses just generous giving of the possession. It says, the Lord said to Abraham after Lot had parted with him, look around you where you are, to the north, to the south, to the east and the west. The land you see, I will give to you and your offspring forever. I will make your offspring like the dust of the earth. So we see as God kind of comes in and he gives his blessing to Abraham. He says, you gave away part of the land to Lot. He says, I'm going to give you all of it. Look in every direction and I'm going to give it to you all because you've chosen to release it onto me. And we see this again. I think it's so funny because Abraham is just example after example of just releasing his things over to God. We see this again a little bit later. This is just the next chapter. Abraham has just come and he's rescued Lot. So Lot was captured by these kings, and Abraham gets his people together, and the Lord gives him victory over these kings. And so now he's meeting with the people that he just freed. So Abraham is like the victor here. He's someone that has just won, and they're talking about the spoils. Who's going to get the spoils from this war? And it says, then Abraham gave a tenth of everything. The king of Sodom said to Abraham, give me the people and keep the goods for yourself. He wants to give him the goods. But Abraham said to the king of Sodom, with raised hand I have sworn an oath to the Lord Most High, creator of heaven and earth, that I will accept nothing belonging to you, not even the thread or strap of a sandal, so that you will never be able to say, I made Abraham rich. I will accept nothing but what my men have eaten and the share that belongs to the men that went with me. So we see here just this absolute generosity of Abraham. Someone that had, he was the victor. He just won the great battle. And they said, please, let us give you these possessions. And if you look here, what does he say about it? He says, I don't want anyone to be able to say that you made me rich. He says, God has blessed me and God will continue to bless me. And I want my riches to come from God. And so Abraham, again, just releases possessions, just gives away this vast bounty to people in his life. And I think it's just so convicting to me when I think about my life, because, you know, it's easy, I feel like, when you're early on in life to say that you give your possessions over to God, because you don't have much, you know. When I was a kid, you know, you're growing up or you're going to college and you kind of have all you need and you're under your parents' insurance, you don't even know how much insurance costs. And it's easy to kind of give up your possessions, but it's so easy once you kind of, you start having your own thing, you have to pay for insurance or childcare or a mortgage, and all of a sudden you start wanting to cling, right? And every opportunity you get, you don't want to give things away, right? You want to kind of start grabbing them and taking them for yourself. And it's so easy for them to carve out a place in our hearts. And we see that with Abraham, this never happened. Even when people tried to give him things, he just gave them right back because he always had this trust in God. And he held his plans open, you know. Many times, I feel like in my life, whenever I make a plan, God just kind of messes with it just to see if I really trust him, you know. I think the biggest time for me was right after college, right? I was coming out of college, and I had this whole little map, you know, where I wanted to work, the ministries I wanted to be a part of, etc. And God just kind of threw a wrench in all of it, you know. And I ended up kind of working at a camp for a time, and I was cleaning toilets, and I was like, you know, what is this, God? What are you doing? But God was really, he was showing me, right? He says, you make plans, but I have the right to change them, right? These are not your plans. I don't want you to hold your plans like this. I want you to hold them with an open hand. So we see this in Abraham, how he had this open thing, and it results in God's blessing. Right after this scenario, God comes to Abraham, and he cuts a covenant with Abraham. He's one of the few people in history that God's actually made a covenant directly with. And he says, I'm going to bless you again. He says, fear not, Abraham. I am your shield, and your reward shall be great. He says, when you give your reward to people, I'm going to reward you. I will continue to protect you and be with you, because I'm your God. Look to me. And we see this in life, that when we have this open hand, God comes with blessing. But I want to do one more example, because if you talk about Abraham, you can't talk about Abraham without talking about Isaac, right? Him giving up of Isaac. And I think when we really look about it, the most telling test that we have of whether or not we have an open hand to God is what we deal with some of our most precious belongings as well as our expectations. So if you know anything about Abraham, God has continually to bless him and say that I'm going to make you a great nation. But Abraham kind of believed him, but he was saying, he's like, I kind of don't believe you, because he had no kids. He had no children. He says, how, God, are you going to make me a great nation if I have no children? But finally, God, through Sarah, gives him the child, and the child was Isaac. So this is his only child, right? Anyone have one child, only child? There you go, yeah. Because you're so, like, if you want to talk about, like, a spoiled child, this was not only, like, his only child, this is, like, the promised child, right? And so Jacob loves Isaac, Abraham loves Isaac, and this is also a symbol of his future, right? All these future plans and expectations were wrapped up in Isaac, because this is what God had promised for Abraham. This was his purpose, right, to create this great nation. It comes in Isaac. But then we see one great and final test of Abraham, and God asks him to give up his only child. Not only his only child, but his whole future. All of his expectations for what God was going to do was wrapped up in Isaac, and he asked him to sacrifice him. So we see this coming later. This is Genesis 22. It says, then God said, take your son, your only son, whom you love, Isaac. Go to the region of Moriah. Sacrifice him there as a burnt offering on a mountain. I will show you early the next morning. Early the next morning, Abraham got up and loaded his donkey. Abraham took the wood for the burnt offering and placed it on his son Isaac, and he himself carry the knife and fire. And I don't have the rest of it, but we see that Abraham immediately goes out and he obeys God. The next morning he gets up and he's ready to sacrifice his son. And before he kind of brings down the knife, God stops him. And he says, you know, Abraham, you've passed my test, right? This was God kind of testing Abraham's faith. Would you release even Isaac up to me? And I want to really kind of sit on this for a little bit, because I think that this is the real test. Some of you, you've been living life as a Christian for a long time, you know, and you've learned how to release your possessions to God. You know that God gives and takes away. And you know how to release your plans to God. He's already kind of moved you to different places. But really, I feel like the final test is, what do we do with our expectations? You know, we all have certain expectations for the future, whether it be expecting that loved ones are going to be around us, right? We see here him offering up Isaac, but so often in our lives, as life continues on, some people go away that we were not expecting to have. I know we've had a few deaths in my extended family, people that we didn't expect to pass away, and it was an expectation that we had, right? We expected to be with them and for them to be with us, and sometimes those expectations are really broken, and these are some of the hardest times that we go through, I feel like, as Christians, when God changes the plan in ways that we completely did not expect. And we say, and we struggle with God, and we say, God, this was a good thing, you know, this was a good person, this was someone that I was going to live life alongside. And he takes those things away from us sometimes, and it's the hardest test, and it's not easy to go through, but when we choose not to release it onto God, it makes our lives only harder, right? Because then we are constantly fighting against God over these things that he took from us that we never expected him to take. And it's the hardest test. It's a test that we all face at some point in our lives, and it's a test that Abraham passed, right? It was a test where he really showed God that no matter what you do, even if you're going to take my only child that I thought was going to be the promised one, I'm going to continue to follow after you, and really open up his hand. And we see the results in Abraham's life. Again, God comes down, and he gives him the substitute sacrifice for Isaac, and he blesses him again. He says, I swear by myself, declares the Lord, that because you have done this and not withheld your son, your only son, I will surely bless you and make your descendants numerous as the stars and as the sand on the seashore. Your descendants will take possession of the cities of their enemies, and through your offspring, all the nations on earth will be blessed because you have obeyed me. And we see this ultimate opening of the hand that results in the blessing of God. And so those are kind of my key points, but I don't want to stop here, because I want to look at Jacob, because we see these teachings and we know that they're hard teachings. It's hard to release your expectations and your possessions and your plans to God. But what happens if we don't? What happens if we choose to live life with a closed fist and choose to kind of try to take some things for ourselves as we live on this earth? And I want to do this by looking at Jacob. And first, when you look at Jacob, I think it's so interesting because he was very similar to Abraham. He had the same blessing. In fact, even before Jacob was born, God gives him a blessing. It says here in Genesis, it says, the Lord said to her, two nations are in your womb. Two peoples from within will be separated. One people will be stronger than the other, and the older will serve the younger. So Jacob was born. He was the youngest child. So, you know, if you're like, you want to talk about little brother syndrome, right? He was right underneath Esau. He missed him by a few seconds. But God already points out to Jacob that he's the one that's going to be blessed. And all these blessings of Abraham are going to fall on Jacob, and he gives them to Jacob. But we see that Jacob has a very, very different response to the blessings of God than Abraham does. Whereas Abraham held them loosely, Jacob immediately starts trying to grab at the blessings of God. And we see that, I mean, he even comes out of the womb grabbing onto Esau's heel. But we see this even when you talk about the birthright and the blessing. So usually the birthright and blessing would be given to the oldest child. And rather than trusting that God would give them to him, Jacob instead manipulates to take them. It says here, when Jacob was cooking some stew, Esau came in from the open country, famished. He said to Jacob, quick, let me have some of the red stew. I'm famished. That's why he was called Edom. Jacob replied, first sell me your birthright. So we see immediately that Jacob comes out, and he's manipulating to try and get possessions rather than trusting God for them. And it ultimately ends in him trying to steal his blessing. So Jacob, I probably won't read this, but I'll just kind of give you the background. What happens is Isaac's about to give the blessing, and Jacob actually disguises himself, right? He puts on hair, he pretends to be Esau to steal his brother's blessing. Rather than trusting that God, again, this prophecy that was over him, that he would be the one that would receive the blessing and birthright, he doesn't trust him, and instead he takes. And the result is very different than the result we see with Abraham. Rather than receiving God's blessing, it causes strife and Jacob has to flee. It says here, it says, "Now Esau hated Jacob because of the blessing with which his father had blessed him. And Esau said to himself, 'The days of mourning for my father are approaching. Then I will kill my brother Jacob.'" So we see here an opposite response. Rather than releasing his blessing, Jacob takes it, and it causes Esau to want to kill Jacob, and Jacob has to flee. So he flees into the wilderness, and he's out there, and he now has nothing, right? He's at a vulnerable place in life. Some of you kind of might know what that feels like, where you tried to take some things that God didn't want you to have, and all of a sudden you were left with nothing. And God finds Jacob there, and we see here that God meets Jacob in this place, and this is what happens. It says, "Jacob left Beersheba, set out on Haran, and he reached a certain place, and he stopped for the night because the sun had set. Taking one of the stones there, he put it under his head and lay down to sleep. He had a dream in which he saw a stairway resting on earth with its top reaching to heaven, and the angel of God were ascending and descending on it. There above it stood the Lord." And he said, "I am the Lord, the God of your father, Abraham, and the God of Isaac. I will give you and your descendants the land on which you're lying. Your descendants will be like the dust of the earth. All the peoples of the earth will be blessed through you and your offspring. I am with you. I will watch over you wherever you go, and I will bring you back to this land. I will not leave you until I have done what is promised." And so we see here, this is the account of Jacob and Jacob's ladder. Has anyone heard about Jacob's ladder? Maybe, there you go. Yeah, it's a cat's cradle. It's also a story in the Bible. And I remember when I was growing up, always wondering what this story was about, you know, because it talks about this staircase, right, from heaven to earth and angels going up and down. We'd learn it as kids in Sunday school. And I always like, you know, what was the point? You know, why was there a ladder? What was God really showing? And here's what was going on here. Jacob was at a place where he had been trying to take all the things of God. And God was coming to him and he was telling him one thing. He was saying, "Listen, I am God, right? I am the God of your father Abraham, and I am powerful." He says, "Look, right here, I have angels coming down to earth at all times. The things of this earth you think that are so important are nothing compared to me. I'm constantly changing the riches and people, and I'm affecting the earth, and you can trust me. Don't try to trust things for yourself. Instead, release them and trust me, because I'm a powerful God, and I'm going to be with you." And that was the message that really God was trying to get across to Jacob in the most grandiose fashion as he could, right? Just showing him these ladders to heaven, showing, "I have these riches. I can give you what you need. Trust me." And Jacob, he kind of has this little bit of a revival, right? He's like, "Okay, God, I'm going to trust you." But it doesn't stick. And I think so often in our lives, we have these moments where God really reaches out to us when we're at our lowest, and we say, "Listen, God, I trust you," right? And we say we trust you, but oftentimes after we walk out the door of the church and we go to our lives, we all of a sudden start bringing that clutter back into our lives and we start reaching out. And this is what happens with Jacob. Watch how he treats his possessions. This is right after he arrives where he was going. He's worked with Laban, who's his father-in-law, for two brides, and now they're working out wages. And they make a deal that Jacob chooses, that Jacob uses to manipulate his own wages. So here's the deal that is made between the two of them. It says, once when Jacob says to Laban, "Don't give me anything," Jacob replied, "but if you do this one thing for me, I will go on tending your flocks and watch over them. Let me go through all your flocks today and remove for them every speckled or spotted sheep, every dark-colored lamb, every spotted or speckled goat, they will be my wages." So this is the deal that Jacob has made about his possessions, about his wages. He was kind of negotiating a pay raise with Laban. He says, "When there's a speckled or spotted sheep, those are going to be mine. So that way you know which ones are mine. All the white sheep are going to be yours. And for that wage, I'll look after the entire flock." So that in itself is fine. They're making a wage. But watch how Jacob treats this idea. You see this coming up right in the same chapter. And it says, "Jacob, however, took fresh-cut branches from poplar and plane trees and made white stripes on them by peeling the bark and exposing the inner layer of wood of the branches. Then he placed the peeled branches in all the watering troughs so that they would be directly in front of the flocks when they came to drink. When the flocks were in the heat, they came to drink. They made it in front of the branches. And they were boar young that were streaked or speckled or spotted." So we see here, immediately Jacob makes a deal with Laban about his wages, and he immediately tries to manipulate. And really, it's a dishonest thing, right? He tries to put these branches in front of the sheep so that way they become speckled, so he could increase his and take from Laban, right? And we see this, it's so interesting, right? Because Jacob has this relationship with God, and he says that he trusts him, but in his real life, he's always grasping at things, and he's always trying to take from other people. And you'll see people like this in the church. You know, they worship God, but after Sunday, on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, they're always trying to cheat and manipulate and try to get themselves ahead. And this is the path that Jacob chose. And I don't know if you know anything about biology or how this works, but putting a spotted branch in front of a sheep doesn't actually cause it to have young that are speckled or spotted, right? What's really going on here is God is blessing Jacob, right? God promised to bless Jacob, and he's blessing Jacob by having these sheep. And really what Jacob is doing is completely silly. It's completely ridiculous what he's trying to do, but he continues to do it because he's trying over and over again to grab whatever he can. And I feel like sometimes God just looks down at us and just laughs at all the different efforts and things that we put together to try and get ourselves ahead, when he's ultimately saying, listen, there's only one thing that matters. Are you going to trust me and believe in me? And I'm the one that's going to determine what your wages are going to be and how much possessions you have. And stop trying to steal to get your way ahead. So what ends up happening, the result, again, this is the same old pattern. Jacob chooses to manipulate, and it causes conflict and strife, and he's forced to flee again. So Laban starts noticing that Jacob has all these possessions, and here's what happens. It says, now Jacob heard that the sons of Laban were saying, Jacob has taken all that was your father's, and from what is our father's, and he has gained all this wealth. And Jacob saw that Laban did not regard him with favor as before. Then the Lord said to Jacob, return to the land of your fathers and your kindred, and I'll be with you. So we see the same pattern. Jacob manipulates, and now he has to flee again. And this time, there's only one more place to run, and he has to run back to Esau, the same Esau that had promised to kill him before. And so we see that Jacob comes to a place again where he's in need, and God reaches out to Jacob, but he does it in a very, very unique way. So this is happening after Jacob left Esau. He's in a very weak place because he has left Laban, and he's left Esau, and now he has to go back to Esau. And he's very afraid, and he's alone because he's already sent his wives and livestock ahead. And it picks up here in Genesis 32. Here's what it reads. It says, that night, Jacob got up and took his two wives, his two female servants, and his 11 sons, and crossed the ford of Jabbok. After that, he sent across the stream. He sent over all his possessions. So Jacob was left alone, and a man wrestled with him till daybreak. When he saw that he could not overpower him, he touched the socket of Jacob's hip, so that his hip was wrenched as he wrestled with the man. Then the man said, let me go, for it is daybreak. But Jacob replied, I will not let you go unless you bless me. Then he blessed him there. So Jacob called the place Peniel, saying, it is because I saw God face to face, yet my life was spared. The sun rose above him as he passed Peniel, and he was limping because of his hip. And so this, if you want to talk about weird stories to have to interpret, this drives commentators crazy, right? Because this is a very, very interesting interaction that Jacob has with God. God comes to Jacob in the middle of the night, but he comes disguised as a normal man. So Jacob, when he immediately sees this person, he doesn't really know who it is. And God immediately attacks Jacob. So he's woken up, and all of a sudden this guy's attacking them, and they end up wrestling together. So again, commentators are like, what is going on, right? Like, you know, Jacob is wrestling God, and he's wrestling with God, and they're in this back and forth match, and as the man starts realizing that he can't get the best of Jacob, he comes out and he touches Jacob's socket on his hip, and he immediately dislocates his hip. So I don't know how many wrestlers we have in the audience. I know I was staying with Dave. He was a wrestler. Any wrestlers? Few? There you go. So when you're wrestling, a lot of your power in wrestling is coming from your legs, right? Specifically your hips. If your hip is out of joint, you all of a sudden have no power to actually fight against someone. So in this one blow, what God shows Jacob, he shows him two things. Number one, he takes away all of his strength, right? Jacob can no longer wrestle this man by his own strength because he has no power coming from his legs. He also shows Jacob, though, that he's not just a man, that he's someone supernatural. So all of a sudden, Jacob realizes this is God, right? And this is a really key point in Jacob, because in Jacob's life, because Jacob realizes, if I want to keep going, if I want to keep going and go to Esau, I need God's help. I can't do it by my own strength. I need to release this and trust God. So it says in Hosea, it actually says that he struggles with the man and the angel overcame him. He says, but he wept and begged for his favor, right? So Jacob grabs this man as he tries to get away, and he weeps and he says, please bless me. I need you. And so we see this happen again, where Jacob is at his low point and God comes to him. And finally, Jacob relinquishes, and he's been holding on to these things and been holding on to his plans. And he says, God, take it. Please bless me. I need you. I need your strength. I can't go in my own strength anymore. So God chooses to bless him, but he leaves him with this limp because he wants to remind him, Jacob, I don't want you to run anymore. Right? I'm tired of you manipulating. I'm tired of you running. I'm going to leave you with a limp so you can't run physically. I don't want you to run anymore. I want you to go to Esau. I want you to make recommends and trust me that I'm going to be with you. So we see again that Jacob kind of goes through this type of revival thing, but does it stick? Does Jacob follow through from this? Does anyone know? All right, well, we're going to find out. So so we look at this is the next few verses. We'll see if Jacob follows through and goes with Esau. So here's what comes. So Esau comes out to Jacob, and here's what it says. But Esau ran out to meet Jacob, embraced him, and threw his arms around his neck, and kissed him, and they wept. So this is the best greeting that Jacob could have asked for, right? Esau is just hugging him. He says, I forgive you. I want you to come with me. But this is what happens next. It says, then Esau said, let us be on our way. I will accompany you. But Jacob said to him, let my Lord go ahead of his servant while I move along slowly at the pace of the flocks and the herds before me and the pace of the children until I come to my Lord in Seir. Esau said, let me leave some of my men with you. But why do that? Jacob asked. Just let me find favor in the eyes of my Lord. So that day Esau started back on his way to Seir, and Jacob, however, went to Succoth, where he built a place for himself and made shelters to his livestock. Did Jacob obey God? Did he go with Esau? No. We see here that even though he greets Esau, Esau goes on to Seir, and Jacob goes on to Succoth. Even after he had wrestled with God, and God had put him to this moment of weakness and said, trust in me, follow my plan, Jacob wouldn't give it up. And he manipulates again, he sends Esau ahead, and he goes to another place. Do you know what happens to Jacob at this place? It's the same thing that happened his entire life. This time it was his sons. His sons have a run-in with a local town because they were completely violent, and Jacob is forced to run again. And Jacob runs the rest of his life, going from place to place to place, because he never really landed where God had him, because he never released his plans to God. And again, it ends at the end of his life, Jacob said, few and unpleasant have been my years. And he spent his whole life, someone with the blessing of God on him, where God freely gave him anything Jacob could want, instead chose to spend his entire life wrestling with God, wrestling over things that he wanted, and not obeying God, and not releasing his plans. And he ended up miserable. When he looked back on his life, despite the blessings that God had given him, he was not satisfied. And I think it's such a telling story, because many of us, it's the same message that God gives to us, right? He says, live your lives as sojourners. This is your temporary residence. When you take on possessions, and when you make plans, and when you have expectations for the future, don't hold on to these things, because ultimately, this is just a place that we're passing through. Hold it with an open hand, and trust me. So that, I believe, is the message of Jacob and Esau, and it's something I think that we all strive to. If you want to end your life well, end your life satisfied with life, you need to learn how to relinquish these things to God. So what we're going to do, I believe the band has a closing song, right? Not crazy? No? Yes? Closing hymn. There we go. So we'll come up, we're going to do a closing hymn, and then afterwards we're going to pray. And I want you to think through your life. What are some things that are clutter in your closet? Things that you have started to hold on to and grasp onto. And we're gonna pray together, and I want you to have this opportunity to release them back to God. You know, what are your things? What are your plans? You know, certain things that you desire that you're not willing to give up to God. What are some possessions that you hold so dear that you're not really to release them? What are your expectations? Loved ones, people that you expect for the future, ways that you're thinking to go that you haven't released to God. Think about those things, because I want us to play to really release them this Sunday. Sound good? Okay.